Hey guys, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. Today, I am so beyond honored. I have an incredible guest and speaker here today. His name is Vincent Pedra. He's an MD, a functional medicine practitioner and doctor. And you guys, I have been following him for such a long period of time. He puts out such quality information, true wisdom, and true practical strategies for not only like optimizing your overall gut, but also your overall health, your hormones, your immune system, you name it. So he just recently launched a book, The Gut Smart Protocol. So huge congrats. You guys know I am an author. I have launched my own book, but he has just put so much information and wisdom into this book. So first and foremost, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I know you have a lot of things that you have to do. You do a lot of things. I mean, you're a professor for the Institute of Functional Medicine. You're founder and CEO of Happy Gut Life. You have so much on your plate. So just thank you so much for taking your time to connect with me and share your wisdom to my listeners today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. So you just recently launched your book, The Gut Smart Protocol. So today we are going to talk about the gut, guys. He is a gut guru for sure. And I'm very excited because there are a lot of nitty-gritties we could potentially get into. But first and foremost, I have to ask, what made you say, let's do a gut book? Because you could have done anything.
Well, I could have done anything. Well, dating back 7 years to my first book, Happy Gut, it's a quick, I can tell a story. Do you want to hear the story behind my first book? Cause then it kind of brings us into why I decided to do a second book. I don't know if you felt this way when you wrote a book, but for years before I wrote my first book, I felt like I had a book in me and I didn't know what that book was, but I knew that in my life journey, in my soul journey, that if I never created a book, that there would be a part of me that didn't feel fulfilled. Like I didn't do part of what my mission was here. But it was really when my mom passed away in April of 2012 that really hit home. I was 38 years old, about to turn 39, looking into my decade of the 40s, and had just lost my mom and was thinking, what is my legacy? You know, like it really, like when you lose somebody, it makes you think about, you know, life feels long, but then it just goes in a blip of a second. And you think like, wow, like the next 20, 30, 40 years, like they're going to go by, they're going to seem slow, but they're going to go by really fast. And I realized that it was right under my nose. That book that I had been striving for, I had so many book ideas. I had proposed book ideas. I was friends with the VP of Creative Development at HarperCollins, one of the biggest publishers. And I would tell her my book ideas and she would shoot all of them down. And I realized, and that was like 6 years worth of book ideas before I finally came upon the book idea that became Happy Gut. And what I realized was that I was trying to produce a book that I thought the masses needed, but the book that needed to be written was the one that was the most authentic for me. And it was about the gut because I had grown up with gut issues and had suffered tremendously during my teen years and into my 20s from having been on 20 plus rounds of antibiotics as a teenager, destroyed my gut microbiome. I developed food sensitivities to gluten and dairy and other foods that I wasn't aware of. So I kept eating these foods and not understanding why I didn't feel great, why I was mentally foggy, why I was tired, why I was achy, why my gut was always a mess, why I was breaking out in eczema. And then I discovered functional medicine and started fixing my gut and became really, really curious about gut health. It wasn't like I was trying to be a gut health expert. It was just, I was just pursuing what I felt was really fascinating about my patients. I was starting to look at my same old patients, but through the lens of the gut and noticing things like a patient would come in with allergies and gut issues, another patient with migraines and gut issues, another patient with, you know, it could even be a history of childhood sexual abuse and then had IBS as an adult. You know, so I was looking at all the correlations with gut health and how it affected the rest of the body and started realizing first that I could reverse my own gut health issues that I thought were life sentence. And about the time that I discovered functional medicine, I was just coming to the point where I was just accepting that this was quote unquote my normal, that I could be eating out at a restaurant and then suddenly my gut was upset. I had to run to the bathroom, or that the next day I didn't feel well. I had no idea what was causing it. And I realized that it was reversible, that all the damage I had done as a teenager could be fixed. Mm-hmm. And I started working on my own gut issues and then just became so fascinated with it and working with patients on gut health that little by little, they started referring friends, family, coworkers. And before I knew it, without planning, I had become a gut expert, you know, and quote unquote, because I feel like we're always learning, you know, there's so much to learn about the gut and the gut microbiome. And when my mom passed away, one day, suddenly I had the idea, I'm going to write a book about the gut. This is the book that I'm meant to write. It's the book that I was waiting for all this time. And it was under my nose. It was so close to me that I couldn't even see it. And that's how Happy Gut was birthed. About 2 months after my mom passed, I spent an entire weekend and wrote the proposal for Happy Gut, mapped it out, and that became a book. And HarperCollins ended up being my publisher in the end, which was funny. And actually, when I came up with this book idea, I decided that I used to meet with my friend who was the VP at HarperCollins about every 6 months. I would invite her out to breakfast and have her critique everything that I was doing and give me advice, like, you know, you're not doing enough social media, you should be doing this, that. And, you know, she was a tough lover. And when I came up with this book idea, I invited her to breakfast, but not to tell her. I looked at her and I said, I have a book idea. And this book idea is the one. And I'm so sure of it that I'm not going to tell you what it's about. You're going to have to wait until I send it to all the publishers, and you're going to want this book. And I had such a strong vision for that this book would become what I knew it would become, that I felt like I was connected to the future in that moment, that I already saw my book being acquired by a publisher, and little did I know what a path it would take me on. And here we are 7 years later after the publishing of my first book, and you might wonder, well, why write another book about the gut? You know, there's a lot of health experts out there, and they rotate the books that they write. They write about one topic, they write about inflammation, then they write about mold, and then they write about, you know, aging better. And I could have done that, but it wouldn't have felt authentic to me, because I've lived and breathed gut health and the gut microbiome for the last 7 years. And I think one book is not enough. And what I've done is I've taken everything that I've learned since then and working with patients on gut health issues, mm-hmm. and put it into this second book, which is a bit deeper than the first book, talks about a lot of things in greater depth than the first book did, and also is a personalized program, which I realized since the publishing of my first book that it's really hard to make a one-size-fits-all when it comes to gut health, because gut patients present differently, and some have really severe issues, and they can't eat the same as someone who only has mild issues or even moderate issues. So I wanted to make a book that spoke to all of those people so they could feel heard and seen and understood. And that's part of what I did with this new book, The Gut Smart Protocol.
It's so incredible that you say that, because I see a lot of, you know, not only like practitioners and authors push set protocols and set directions for every single person. And that's not the way each person is, right? We're a beautiful unicorn that has our own history, genetics, lifestyle, symptoms, our own internal gut dysbiosis. So that's very important. But also the way you wrote it is very helpful, because it's not just here's what's going on. Here's information. It's okay. Here are practical tips and strategies and resources and recipes that you can utilize to get yourself back on track.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that I've always heard. And sometimes I hear as a critique of other health books is they give a general plan, but then they don't tell you how to do it. You know, what's the practical? Like, so what I did is I divided, I mean, this is probably one of the most extensive food lists you'll ever see in a book. It includes ferments, it includes everything. And it tells you what you can eat based on your gut smart score, if you're mild, moderate, or severe. And I think that's really important, because not just having meal plans and recipes, and we've got 65 recipes in the book that are also categorized by mild, moderate, severe. Let me tell you, that was so difficult. But also to have lists where if you're eating out, you at least have a toolkit that can tell you, okay, I can eat this, but I should avoid this because this is going to make me not feel so great.
That's tangible, very practical things that people need. So thank you so much for incorporating that.
Yeah.
So
it took a lot of work, but yeah.
You should be very proud of yourself. Yeah. The gut. Seriously, we already know, and my listeners, they have a good variety and like background on what leaky gut is, heightened intestinal permeability is. So they know, and I've talked about kind of like the gut line is like a door, right? We want the good guys to come in and the bad guys to stay out. But the key thing here to point out is you listed 7 specific types of leaky gut. So can you tell us like what made you list out these 7 specific things, and what are the most contributing factors of quote unquote leaky gut for you in particular?
I mean, this is just based on research, what's come out in the literature, as well as what I've experienced through care of patients and also through my own healing journey. The different, you know, I divide symptoms into what we call gut-centric symptoms, which everybody knows, symptoms that happen inside your gut, diarrhea, constipation, abdominal pain, bloating, cramping. You know, that's pretty obvious you're having an issue with your gut if you feel something in your gut, right?
Right.
What's not so obvious is what you have is a gut-related symptom. And those symptoms happen in satellite areas of the body that we might think are not related to the gut, but are completely related to the gut. And this is what leaky gut does. It causes symptoms in areas of the body that are seemingly unrelated to your gut and yet so strongly tied to your gut health. So I like to call the gut, and I know if you follow me on Instagram, I came up with this idea that our gut is our inner skin. And that was my way of relating the gut to our outer skin, the one that we see. But our gut is actually embryologically related to the skin. It's like the skin folded inwards is what creates the digestive system during embryo development. And I think because of that, you know, it's been recognized since for thousands of years in Chinese medicine that if you have a skin rash, if you have a skin issue, then you have to look at the gut. That's where the problem is arising. Mm-hmm. The other part that is very strongly affected by the gut is the airway. And that, you know, I've seen it so many times. People get sick over and over. And the reason is that their gut microbiome is disordered. They've got leaky gut. And that's what was happening to me. I just kept getting sick so much as a child. And when I started healing my gut, which happened initially accidentally just by removing or not exposing myself as much to dairy when I was in medical school, just because it wasn't practical mm-hmm. as much. I stopped having milk because I couldn't sit down and eat cereal with milk. And I noticed that I wasn't getting sick as easily as I used to. So even just removing an inflammatory food had a very positive effect on me. And I was already paying attention to things like that. So the airway, but also the brain, the gut-brain connection. I mean, we hear a lot about that, and there's so many interrelationships with this, because when we talk about the brain, we're talking about the brain functionally, but we're also talking about mental health, depression, anxiety, and its connection to gut health. And we're also talking about the aging brain and dementia and its connection to gut health. The other thing that I included in these gut-related symptoms are joints. And actually, if I was writing another edition of my book at this point, I would add bone health because my research has turned up that there are interconnections between the gut microbiome and osteoporosis in both men and women. I mean, obviously women are more predisposed, but it's something for us to think about. So joint health, bone health, energy. We think of the thyroid as our master gland, our master hormone for energy and metabolism, but really the gut is, and leaky gut is affecting our energy levels dramatically, you know, because if you're chronically inflamed because you have leaky gut, it's almost like having a low grade flu or cold, but not having, you know, those cold flu symptoms, but having a certain degree of them that makes you feel tired, but it also affects the functioning of the mitochondria, the little energy centers inside your body. You know, if you have leaky gut and you can't absorb your nutrients properly, you have disordered gut microbiome, you're not making fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin K2 from the gut, then these things are going to affect your overall health and energy. And metabolism, especially glucose regulation, so insulin sensitivity. You know, we used to think when I went to medical school, the diabetes was all about the pancreas and the beta cells. And you know, when diabetes starts, it's because the beta cells are getting tired and they've been overworked, producing too much insulin. We never looked at the effect of the gut and the gut microbiome on insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance, and you know, things like postprandial endotoxemia and what that does for insulin resistance. And so it affects your metabolism. And as a result, it's going to affect how much fat you're storing in the middle, or how, you know, how much you weigh, whether you have a healthy weight or whether you tend towards being overweight. And finally, I mean, kind of, I've talked about it from the beginning, talking about how I used to get sick so often. The immune system is another really important factor related to leaky gut, because 70 to 80% of our immune system is all along the gut lining. It's ground central for the gut. It's the command center, and it controls how the immune system is operating for the rest of the body. And the way I used to tell people and think of it is, if your immune system is fighting a war at your gut because your gut is inflamed and you've got leaky gut, then it's recruited most of its troops there. So when a virus tries to get in through your nasal passages, your body just doesn't have the troops, the white blood cells, to go and keep that virus at bay. So then you get sick, and you get sick over and over. So these are some of the really main and important relationships that exist in the body with the gut. And part of my goal with this book is to really help people see that gut health is not just about the gut. It's beyond the gut. And one of the things I learned over the years working with patients is that you don't have to present with any gut-centric symptoms that I talked about. You might not have diarrhea. You might not have constipation. You might not have bloating or abdominal pain, but you might still have issues in other parts of your body that are actually being caused by your gut and leaky gut without you even realizing it, because you're not aware of, or you're not sensitive to, or maybe the symptoms are not intense enough. So you don't have any gut-centric symptoms, but you might present with an autoimmune disease, which is an immunological dysfunction related to leaky gut and disruption of the gut microbiome.
I absolutely love that you talk about how the gut is essentially like one of the firm foundations for optimizing your overall health. What happens in your gut doesn't stay in your gut. Your gut's not like in Vegas, right? Where when it stays in Vegas, doesn't stay in Vegas. It's going to go everywhere. And so whenever somebody comes to me too, because I'm a registered dietitian, and when they say, okay, I'm having all these gut issues, I'm like, okay, like that is also manifesting in your chronic fatigue, your inability to build muscle, your hormonal imbalances, your skin issues, your allergies, your stuffy nose, your sinus congestion. Like, it's all connected together. So it's very important with any issue with your health. Like, you have to first, in my opinion, you've got to look at the gut and you've got to look at the adrenal. So those are the top two places I like to go to.
Yeah, I agree. And when you talk about the adrenals, for me, it's really looking at stress and looking at the vagus nerve and the HPA axis and what's happening there, because I think, people are walking around more stressed than they realize that they are. And I think a lot of people have adapted to living with mental stress to the point that, when something's causing a nerve stimulus continuously over time, you stop noticing it as well, right? Like, you're wearing your clothes, and now probably because I said it, you're going to feel your clothes on you. But there are moments in the day where you forget that the clothes is touching you, right? It's just there. And in the same way, like our mental stress for a lot of people, they become desensitized to it. But what I tell people is that your mind might become desensitized to the stress or stop recognizing it, but your body never does. Your body knows. And it manifests with leaky gut. It manifests with low energy. And like you said, HPA axis dysfunction leading to adrenal issues and all sorts of, the diseases of the modern Western world.
Now, we know about the power of the gut. So 70-80% of the immune system is in our gut. We know we need a proper digestive enzymes, bile acids, everything to digest our foods, absorb our nutrients. Is there anything else you would like to say about the power of the gut?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I feel like energetically, the gut is where we digest our emotions, and funny enough, more serotonin is produced in the gut than our happiness molecule than in the brain. And that serotonin actually can't cross the blood-brain barrier. So that serotonin is being used locally in the gut to regulate things like gut motility and other things. And also to stimulate the vagus nerve to then send signals up to the brain, which is really important. So yeah, I mean, we can go any direction you want. There's so much to unpack.
I love that you mentioned mental health, because it's such a huge connection with that lack of serotonin, but also you lose nutrients and the vagus nerve communication. Then there's a polyvagal theory, and there's so much to dive into, but I want to make sure that we talk about the vagus nerve, because that's something that a lot of people don't know about. Can you talk about the vagus nerve and its role and influence on the gut microbiome, and of course, our overall health?
Yeah. So think of the vagus nerve as this long wire. I call it a telephone wire, if people remember the old phones, connecting the brain and...
Throwback.
Yeah, throwback. I grew up in that era, so I can say I remember that time when there was a dial tone. I don't know if you know that. There was, when you pick up the phone, there had to be a dial tone. And if that tone wasn't there, then you knew the phone was dead. Well, in the same way, Your vagus connects your brain with all the internal organs. And for it to be functioning properly, there has to be a tone. We call it the vagal tone. And most people, when they're really stressed, they're walking around with low vagal tone. Now, how do you know that you have low vagal tone? It can manifest in a lot of different ways. But one really common thing that happens, like say you just went through a really stressful event, you went through a breakup or you're going through a divorce, and suddenly you can't eat, or when you eat, food just sits in your stomach like a rock and it just feels really upset. Well, that's low vagal tone. Because when that vagal tone is active, it's telling your stomach to produce stomach acid in response to food, and to release digestive enzymes to break down the proteins in food. And it's telling your gut to contract and move the food down your gut so it can keep moving down. So when you have low vagal tone, you become constipated. You don't digest your food well. You can even get acid reflux because you're not producing enough stomach acid. And low vagal tone has also been associated with mental health disorders like depression, like treatment-resistant depression. They did a study where they used the vagal nerve stimulation device and found that they could improve over 30%. It was like 32% or something like close to that of people who had treatment-resistant depression. They were not responding to any medication. When their vagus nerve was stimulated, they got better. So it tells you the vagus is doing a lot of things. And 70% of the vagal fibers, 70 to 80%, are pointing up from the periphery, from all the internal organs, back to the brain to give the brain a reading of what's happening on the outside. And then that other 20, 30% is pointing down from the brain. And we know the importance of both directions. You know, for example, from traumatic brain injury patients, that, you know, when you suffer a concussion, that causes a, you know, it completely throws off your brain waves and it causes your vagus nerve to malfunction. And they find that within 30 minutes of a severe concussion where you've been knocked out, that your gut permeability increases, and then all, it's like opening the floodgates. Like you said, all this, these inflammatory substances enter the body. So we know that that vagal tone is in part controlling gut permeability, which is really interesting, you know. So it's a downstream thing, because we're always talking about what's coming from the gut. And then we know in the reverse that the vagus has nerve endings all along these intestines with receptors for things like serotonin, so 5-HT receptors that when stimulated send a signal up to the brain. And among the neurotransmitters that are released when that vagus signal fires in the brain are transmitters like GABA, which is inhibitory, which helps kind of cool down brain regions, so keep things calm. So we know that when things that have been used through ancient time, like breath work with chanting, humming, that all of that activates the vagus nerve. It puts you into a more of a parasympathetic, into that ventral vagal tone that tells your body that it's safe. And when your body feels safe, your body can digest, it can absorb, and more importantly, it can heal.
I love that you brought up the ventral vagal, and I know we're going off of like completely where we may have gone, but okay, polyvagal theory, do you mind, because connecting this to the gut I think is very important. A lot of people do not talk about this. We have our sympathetic and our parasympathetic. My listeners know that we have the parasympathetic rest and digest, but I have not yet talked about the ventral and the dorsal vagal side. Do you mind telling my listeners how that influences the gut?
Yeah, it's very important. So when people are in ventral vagal mode, that's where you feel relaxed. That's where you are in what we call that parasympathetic rest and digest mode. But a lot of people are walking around with the ventral vagus deactivated and the dorsal vagus activated. And the way to think about dorsal vagal activation is anxiety, depression. So mental health issues, feelings of irritability, not feeling safe, you know, and the reactivity that comes with that. And almost like a sense of paralysis, right? So it's not quite fight or flight. It has some elements of that, but it's combined with a feeling of paralysis, like not wanting to move, not wanting to do things. So it's very important to do things, especially in our overstimulated society, you know, smartphones, everything. There's so much technological electronic stimulation, and not enough exposure to nature, which also helps us get into more of that restful ventral vagal mode.
Yeah, I think the key thing is, like, a lot of people think, hey, I'm in parasympathetic, I'm resting, I'm relaxing, but in that parasympathetic and that dorsal vagal shutdown, you also have that true shutdown of your digestive tract as well. You feel disconnected from your body. It's dark, it's hopeless, it's helpless. And with all that, it even further is a stressor to your body, which is a stressor to your gut. And then you're not going to be properly able to digest and absorb your nutrients at all. And it keeps this vicious, vicious cycle. So of course, I love that you mentioned nature time, big, all about that. Adding in things that add to your life, surrounding yourself with people that make you happy and laugh, all very important things. But I just wanted to make sure we talked about that, because it's not discussed with the vagus nerve and the vagal theory and all the impacts with the gut too.
Yeah, and just to give a practical tip, there was a study that came out last year that looked at What happens if we had people spend time in nature? I mean, basically a nature prescription. And is there a certain sweet spot? You know, so if we have people go out in nature for 30 minutes, 3 times per week, what does that do to cortisol levels? And they found that the sweet spot was 30 minutes, 3 times per week in nature, lowered blood cortisol levels. And cortisol, for anybody listening, is your one of your stress hormones. You don't want your cortisol to be too low. You also don't want it to be too high. And most people walking around, you know, they're stressed, they've got high cortisol. That's where I say, like, your body is feeling the stress, even though your mind might be trying to trick you and say, I'm not stressed. But your body at the same time is freaking out. And it might be freaking out with very recognizable symptoms like constipation, abdominal pain, bloating, but it could be that you're fatigued. It could be that you're drained or that you're tired, but you're wired, you know, all these things. But just getting out in nature, you know, sometimes people think, well, oh, then I've got to go out on hikes. And that, you know, even just going to the park for 30 minutes, 3 times per week and spending time in the park can have a positive effect on your stress hormones.
I definitely feel it in my soul too. Whenever I go to the beach or I go out in nature and hiking, changes my life, really helps support my digestion too. So let's talk about the key factors, environmental, diet, lifestyle, things that can contribute to an unhealthy gut or quote unquote leaky gut.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest ones.
There's a lot.
There's a lot to unpack here. But, you know, I'll start with the one that people like me, meaning doctors, are responsible for. And also worldwide, I mean, people themselves and just the way that we make antibiotics, we're overprescribing them. And when you leave the United States, you can just walk into a pharmacy and get an antibiotic and, you know, self-diagnose and think, well, I need an antibiotic, when it's just a virus that really would get better without an antibiotic. And unfortunately, because of these things, we've generated resistant bacteria that are resistant to, you know, the old school antibiotics. So we have to keep making newer and newer, stronger antibiotics.
It's sad.
Yeah. And it's a big onslaught on the gut. And look, for anybody listening, you know, obviously antibiotics are also part of the reason that our lifespans have been extended over the last 200 years is the discovery of antibiotics. And certainly antibiotics are life-saving. You know, what I try to do and teach people is that, look, take antibiotics for when they are necessary, but don't take them if they're not necessary. And if you're wondering, you're listening, you're like, well, I'm just a patient. Like, how do I know? Well, you can ask questions. Ask your doctor, you know, just when they prescribe an antibiotic, ask them, do you think this is really necessary? Or are you prescribing this just to be on the safe side? Or do you really think I need to take this? Or could we wait a couple of days and see if I start getting better on my own? You know, because if you have a UTI, yeah, I mean, that could become a kidney infection and you don't want to end up in the hospital with bacteria in your blood, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it's important to treat. But it's also very important to recognize that antibiotics are overprescribed. They are often given unnecessarily for viral infections, and they're not benign. So when you take an antibiotic, yeah, it might knock out an infection, or maybe you think that it made you better because it just coincided in time and you were going to just get better on your own anyway because it was a virus. But it's also causing damage to your gut microbiome, and it's causing damage to your gut lining as a result and increasing your risk for leaky gut.
Mm-hmm. I love that you mentioned antibiotics are helpful because a lot of people demonize them. And it's important to note that antibiotics save lives when used correctly. We don't want to overprescribe them, but we don't want to, just because you have an ear infection or you have maybe bronchitis and your doctor gives you an antibiotic, doesn't mean don't take that antibiotic, right? You need antibiotics to save your life sometimes. Just don't take them if not necessary.
Take them with awareness. Mm-hmm. And if you do have to take them, which is, I talked a lot about that in my first book, Happy Gut, about how to recover the gut post antibiotics. But you know, in the last 20 years of my career as a doctor, I've kept a lot of people from being hospitalized by giving them an antibiotic. They had a pneumonia, they had a kidney infection. So antibiotics are not just life-saving, but they also help save the healthcare system money. And at the same token, they're also overprescribed, and a lot of money is spent on unnecessary antibiotics.
Antibiotic use, I think, is definitely easy for doctors because they get that, you know, that kickback too. And it's easier for them to throw an antibiotic than actually dive in, focus and focus on giving a client time and figuring out what the root cause is. It's sad, but
it's really sad. And I can tell you, having been trained as a traditional doctor, I know how the doctor mind thinks. I know how the system trains doctors. When you go see a regular doctor, not a functional medicine doctor, just a regular doctor, and you walk into their room and you've got 15 minutes max, you know, so you walk in with a cold, you have 15 minutes max. That doctor is trying to get to what prescription do I write to help this person and move them along. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get to that point as fast as possible because 15 minutes, you don't have a lot of time.
No.
To figure out root cause. I mean, I spend 30 minutes to an hour on follow-ups with my patients. We're working on chronic things, you know, but if it's a cold, I'll give them a whole strategy set on how to deal with that. And we might even dive into, why did you get sick in the first place? What's going on in your life? Are you stressed with work? Are you unhappy with work? Are you in a relationship that's not, you know, fueling you anymore? You know, like, so always trying to uncover the root of the root, because symptoms are just the sign of something else that's going on. You've got to dig deeper.
There's so many things that we could talk about into like the causes too. I mean, you already know there's NSAIDs, there's birth control. You talked about stress, trauma, alcohol, environmental toxins, pesticides. There's such a laundry list of what can cause dysbiosis, what could contribute to leaky gut.
And a lot of these things are under people's control, mm-hmm. you know, and some of these things are not as much in control, or it's kind of like a, you know, it's a trade-off of pros versus cons. I mean, we talk about NSAIDs, like over-the-counter ibuprofen, things like that, that increase gut permeability. And we used to think that Tylenol, that acetaminophen, did not increase gut permeability, but we found that it actually does alter the gut microbiome in ways that can increase gut permeability. So any of these, you know, you think that something is over-the-counter, that it's safe. It's not necessarily safe for your gut. I mean, if you read the fine print, you're not supposed to take these medications for more than 2 weeks without talking to a doctor, but that's not what happens. People end up taking, my sister, for example, was taking ibuprofen or Advil for pain, and she didn't tell me that this was going on, and then she developed an ulcer.
Oh, goodness.
So she had to go off of it. And so these things are not benign. And like you mentioned, alcohol is like, we use alcohol to sterilize surfaces. So when you're drinking alcohol, it's actually almost like taking an antimicrobial. It's partially killing off good bacteria. And I don't know, I mean, anybody who's listening, like, think about like the day after you go out drinking, the night before, does your gut feel a bit off? Like, maybe you have a loose stool, maybe you don't feel quite right, you know, like, and you might be listening to this and realize, oh yeah, like, I never really thought about that, but the day after I go out drinking with my friends, my gut doesn't feel quite right. Well, it's because it's affecting your gut microbiome, and it's not just the sugars in the alcohol, but you also mentioned the pesticides, you know, another thing that we have some control over, because you can choose what foods you eat and what foods you don't, that either have pesticides or don't. And if you have to eat on a budget, and I put this in my book, thanks to contributed by the Environmental Working Group, the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen, mm-hmm. you know, so you can choose how to spend your money if you're on a budget, but at least, you know, try to buy organic, anything that's in the Dirty Dozen list, because those are the top 12 foods that are highest in pesticide residues. And, you know, if you need to save money, then the Clean 15, you can buy non-organic. Ideally, if you could buy everything organic, would be great. But reducing our exposure to pesticides is a really important part of healing the gut.
And for you, you gave that wonderful list. I think the most important thing is like pesticides. It's not just like, and you put this in the book, it's not just lowering the pesticides that we're exposed to. It's also like what we are exposing ourselves to in nature too. So can you tell about that and the soil and kind of like the terrain theory?
Absolutely. And this ties to a trip I went to Africa when I was in the process of researching this book and putting this book idea together. And I got invited to go to Africa to stay with the Hadza. It's one of the last hunter-gatherer tribes on the planet. And the cool thing about them is that someone actually got curious and has done studies looking at their gut microbiome. So they took their stool and they did a stool PCR and they looked at microbial diversity, mm-hmm. and they compared it to an Italian group of control subjects. So you can imagine like what the Italian diet is like, you know, and it's got a lot of vegetables and Mediterranean beans and olive oil, all those things, you know, so it's a pretty, you would consider it to be one of the healthier diets on the planet. And they compared it to so they compared the stool of the Italians to the stool of the Hadza, and the Hadza had greater microbial diversity than the Italian group. Now, what accounts for that? Well, they're certainly not being exposed to antibiotics, mm-hmm. and they're not really being exposed to pesticides. They're foraging for root vegetables. They eat honey, but not just the honey, the honeycomb, the little bees. In Africa, the bees that make the honeycombs, they're make them inside the tree bark, and they're super tiny bees. They look like flies, actually. They don't even look like bees. And so I went and went foraging with them and ate a root vegetable that was dug out of the ground and had honey out in the field. It was really wild. And, you know, and they're hunting for animals. They forage for berries. They eat baobab fruit, which is that beautiful tree that you think of when you think of the Lion King. And so they don't eat an incredibly colorful diet, these hunter-gatherers in Tanzania, and yet they have greater microbial diversity. Mm-hmm. And part of that, I think, is not just the fact that they haven't been exposed to antibiotics and pesticides, it's also that they are out in nature. They're getting their hands dirty. They're getting exposed to the microbiome in the soil, you know, to in the plants. And that increases the diversity and resilience of the gut microbiome.
It's so incredible how the true microbiome of not just our gut, but also the microbiome, the soil microbiome, that impacts us. I think the thing is like, there's so much involved, whether like it's like C-section or we naturally birthed, what we were exposed to right when we were, you know, we were put into this world. There's so much that matters. And it's fascinating and it's interesting to see, even with my clients, like the more the ones that they tell to the ground, that helps with the parasympathetic nervous system, but the ones that are more exposed to true nature, how truly better their gut really is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think it's the missing ingredient, you know, especially as we've moved more towards city life and less exposure to nature. I think it's so important to get out, you know, ground, you know, take your socks off, walk on grass, walk on the beach, you know, get out in nature, touch the dirt, you know, because all of that then enhances not only your resilience, but also the diversity of your gut microbiome, which I like to say is the holy grail of health, because the more diverse your gut microbiome is, the lower your inflammation is, the less likely you'll have leaky gut, the less likely you'll develop a chronic degenerative disease. And just to tie it together, you know, why this fascination with the Hadza? Well, not only is it, you know, because we're not going to, obviously, I'm not telling people to go out and become hunter-gatherers and live out in the middle of nature, although I didn't meet people who did that. The true lesson here is when you don't destroy the gut microbiome like we have in the Western world with antibiotics and pesticides and antibacterial soaps and over-sanitization, what we see with them is they don't have diabetes, they don't have obesity, they don't have any of the chronic degenerative diseases that we associate with the West. They don't have heart disease. They don't have dementia. They do not get cancer. You know, so there's a lesson to be learned here, a very important lesson for us.
And for you, adding to the lessons, what are the top lessons that you would say you've learned and you share to your clients and share to the world to have a optimal, healthy gut? Other than just reading your book, what are the top maybe three things that you would recommend to have an optimal gut microbiome and digestion in general?
Yeah, I'm gonna start with something that I think is very important, even being someone who has written two books about gut healthy diets. And it's something that I learned from working with overstressed type A patients in New York that had gut health issues. And it's basically that you can't out diet and you can't out supplement a stressed out lifestyle. So in my opinion, if you're working on gut health, if you're working on your health, start with your stress. Mm-hmm. Unravel that. Yeah, do everything, you know, work on the diet. Obviously, the diet is really important. And taking away the obstacles to healing is what I call them, things like that are inflammatory foods like gluten and dairy can be in there, you know, especially at the beginning of the gut healing journey. Later on, it's possible to bring back dairy in certain forms and fermented foods, or, you know, some people are in favor of raw dairy. You know, I'm not dogmatic about those things, but I am dogmatic about what needs to be done in order to heal the gut. You know, you can't do it half past. You know, like, oh, I'll just take out gluten 50% of the time. Well, you're then still being exposed to it the other 50%. That's not going to get you to where you want to go. So, you know, if there's a second piece, you know, obviously the stress piece is super important. Like, deal with your stress, but learn stress management techniques, meditation, breath work. And that's what I included in the book, along with some meditation and breath work teachers, including a meditation that I created myself from my experience meditating for over now half of my life. I started meditating when I was 21. And so,
that's so awesome.
Yeah, I can't believe now it's more than half of my life since I discovered meditation in 1995, which is way before meditation became an in thing in this country. So, yeah, you've got to first and foremost deal with the stress. Look at your life. Like, is this the way you want to live? Because you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't just check off all the boxes. I'm doing the right diet, I'm doing the right supplements, but then be rushing through lunch, inhaling your lunch, not being consciously aware of your eating, of what state your body is in before you introduce food into it. And then after having that overscheduled life where you're constantly going to work dinners, or you have friends you're meeting, like never providing that space to get into ventral vagal mode. Mm-hmm. You know, so that is super important. And then secondly, you can't half do it. So if you're gonna commit, then commit. If it comes up that you can have wheat or that you can have dairy, and the Gut Smart protocol is gluten-free, just because gluten, I feel, is harmful to the gut, regardless of any issues, because it increases gut permeability. But if it comes up that you can have something, having it once a week is breaking that. Like, you're not going to see the possibility if you're doing that. So you've got to commit. It's super important. You know, and don't, you know, the only person you're cheating when you do that is yourself.
Right.
You know, you're trying to get away with it, but who are you trying to, you know, who are you trying to up level? Like, who exactly? Because if you still are miserable and not feeling great, then your lack of 100% commitment is part of that. So kind of looking at that, being fully committed. If you decide to do something and you're going to take out dairy, for example, then dairy is out in all of its forms. Butter, yogurt, whatever it is, cream, even that little bit of half and half in the coffee, one tablespoon, it's out. Mm-hmm. Because our body is operating at the microscopic level. So that one tablespoon that doesn't seem a lot to you in the scheme of what you eat per week is quite big at the microscopic level and what it can do to your gut and your gut lining, depending on what your issues are. So that's two. So I talked about stress. I talked about being all in. And I think a third one, which is a really important one, I was talking to a patient about that today, is getting embodied. And by that, I mean like really connecting with your body and listening to your body intuition. And we live in a society where we're kind of taught to overpower all of that, right? I can't tell you how many patients will tell me they just hold their urine because they need to work and they don't want to get up and the bathroom's all the way on the other side of the office. And, you know, and there's all this pressure to produce, 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 as if we are a computer. It's complete abdication of the fact that we are these biological beings with an internal rhythm and a wisdom that comes along with that. But it's so easy in our modern day world to just learn to override that, because what we value is those hard workers, those people, like when I was a resident in the hospital, like, you know, brag like, oh, I stayed up 27 hours. Like, really? That's good? Because your lack of sleep has actually caused your inflammatory pathways to turn on and your gut is probably partly leaky because you're eating too much sugar and crap to stay awake all night. You know, so the things that we value are actually things that are harmful to us, but we teach people to not listen to their bodies. Mm-hmm. And part of the healing journey is to slow down, listen, and start listening to what is your body telling you? What is it craving? What is it not craving? I mean, what I noticed when I was training as a doctor, I used to go and do a yoga class when I had the time. And whenever I came out of a yoga class, you know, and back then I still didn't know quite right what to eat. And I was that resident who at 3 a.m. while I'm on an overnight shift is thinking about where are the M&Ms because I need sugar because I'm not going to make it through the night. And I need to get, I still have 3 patients to admit and it's 3 a.m. I'm going to be up till 6 a.m. and then I have to start rounds. So, you know, you're thinking about what's going to get me there. And then I would go do yoga and I would come out of yoga class and I was so grounded and so even. I didn't crave sugar. I craved vegetables. I was listening to my body and my body would say, like, I want greens. I want healthy food. I want a salad, you know, and it's always there. It's just, we're going to fast to listen to it. So developing that is really important part of the healing process, that embodiment, connecting with the body, starting to listen to the body, your gut intuition.
It's so important and it's hard to do. So I hope people can think about this and be like, okay, it might not be easy for me to just jump into yoga and meditation, but it's those baby steps, doing little journaling, checking in, just literally shutting your eyes and asking yourself, okay, body, how do you feel right now? Where's the tension? All little baby steps to really connect with your body and then also connect with, you know, what could be holding you back? Is it stress? Is it internalized trauma? And figure out, okay, what really needs to happen? What changes do I need to make to really optimize my overall life? So this has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time and most importantly, your expertise.
Thank you. We talked about a lot of things. It was great.
So you guys, this is just not even covering the basics. There is so much in his book. So please make sure you rock and roll over to get his book. I know it's available on Amazon and all different aspects to get it. But again, it's called The Gut Smart Protocol. And I'm just excited because I've read through this and it was fantastic. And I can't wait to try some of the recipes. But thank you so much, Vincent, for taking your time to come on my podcast today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And your listeners can also go to gutsmartprotocol.com and get some bonuses if they if they order a pre-order there, and if they just want to take it for a test drive, they can download a free chapter from the book and see, you know, does this speak to me? Is this something that I want to invest in? I think they will, but, you know, I think people need to find what speaks to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, where can they find you and follow you too? On Instagram, all that.
Instagram is my jam. Yeah. So at Dr. Pedre, at DRPEDRE, I put out a lot of informative content, as well as you know, sometimes try to make funny reels and things that entertain and educate at the same time.
You got to make people laugh, right? We're trying to stimulate the vagus nerve.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, thank you so much again for your time today. You guys, all his information, details, the link, the description will all be in the description below. And then make sure you guys make sure to share this podcast on Instagram, your stories, whatever, that way we can reach as many people as possible and get the information out. So thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
You too.